This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, May 24th. I'm Angela Denning. Next winter's ferry schedule will be leaner than this year's, and that was pretty lean. It's the result of budget cuts, which could lead to the sale of the ferry Taku. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has more.
This year's ferry schedule includes 356 weeks of sailings, but next year, the number will be down 7% to 330.
What happened this legislative session, I don't like at all.
Dennis Egan is a state senator representing Juneau, Haines, and Skagway, all with strong ferry system connections.
I think it's decimated the marine highway system, and the problem is a lot of people don't understand that it's a highway, and sure, it costs money to run, but we pay for a lot of it.
Next year's total budget, in its latest version, is almost 10% lower than this year's spending plan, and some of the money will come out of an account that's being spent down quickly. Ferry spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says cuts will be most visible later this year.
It is not the department's intention to change any of the summer schedule. Any changes will be reflected in the winter schedule or next spring and the beginning part of summer 2017.
Five of the Marine Highway's 11 ferries will tie up for much of the fall, winter, spring schedule. That includes both fast ferries, the Kennecott and the Columbia. The other tied-up ferry is the Taku, which hasn't sailed since last July. Woodrow says officials are researching what needs to be done to sell it off, and that's not restricted to outside buyers.
There has been a lot of discussion of different ferry authorities across the Marine Highway System, potentially communities creating their own ferry authorities to improve ferry service. So those are some of the discussions that are being had of what to do with the Taku before it leaves the state of Alaska, if it does indeed leave the state.
Officials say it costs about $3 million a year to lay up the Taku. That covers the skeleton crew, insurance, and fuel for the generators, so selling it off would reduce operating costs. There are other factors, too, such as the ship's age and condition. Ketchikan Representative Dan Ortez, who also represents Wrangell, says he's concerned about the loss of a ship that served Southeast for years.
It's been a mainstay, and while it would require some refurbishment and some significant monies to do that, I want to make sure that in the long run, it wouldn't be more cost-effective to do that refurbishment rather than to, say, build another ferry or something like that.
Ferry officials are taking written comments on the fall, winter, spring schedule through June 21st. A teleconference is planned for the following day. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
You can look at the proposed ferry schedule and associated documents through a link posted on our website, kfsk.org. Petersburg High School students report another successful trip into the LeConte Bay on the mainland near Petersburg. They were surveying the southernmost tidewater glacier in the northern hemisphere. This is the 33rd year for the high school's LeConte Glacier Survey, and the amount of research and knowledge about the ice mass continues to expand. This year, more students are looking into different aspects of the position and characteristics of that glacier. Joe Vicknicki reports.
The program was started by PHS teacher Paul Bowen back in 1983. Since then, a small group of students have been making an annual helicopter trip out to get a fix on the position of the terminus of the ice, where enormous bergs calve off the face into the bay. They're flown into two points on the steep, rocky walls of the mainland fjord, one on either side of the bay, 300 feet and 1,000 feet above the iceberg-choked water below.
And it was really sunny. We had a lot of fun. And we took our points, and we relaxed for a little bit, and then we flew back.
That's Nathaniel Lenhart, one of the juniors who made this year's trip in the second week of May. He and the other students are back in the classroom for an evening session, going back over the trigonometry needed to calculate the position of survey points recorded this year.
You have the bearing for the north side. We will find the bearing for the south side.
Science teacher Victor Troutman took over the program from Bowen in the 1990s. He tells the students it took him about 3 years to get the math down before he felt comfortable teaching it to others. This year he has two other teachers in the class, math teacher Tommy Thompson and technology teacher John Clute Painter. They made the trip with students this year, and they'll be taking over the class from Troutman. That made this year's trip a little bit different.
No, it all went well, but a little more responsibility on us. Because we were the most experienced going out there on that.
That's senior Chauncey Sandhofer, the only senior in this year's group. It was his second year to do the survey, and he thought the appearance and position of the glacier did not change too much from 2015.
No, it hadn't changed much. Not too much, no. I was on the same side of the glacier, too, so it was just almost like last year.
While teachers are teaching each other, the older students in the class are helping a few younger students who will be making the trip in future years. The program means a lot of work for the students. It's not just a sightseeing trip out to the ice. Students spend their lunchtime once a week out on the streets around the high school working with surveying equipment that they'll be taking to LeConte Bay. Another junior, Isabel Eath, thinks giving up 2 years' worth of her Wednesday lunchtimes to practice surveying was worth it.
Oh, I was up on the north side, and you look down at just the glacier, and you can see there's like a beautiful fjord directly across, and it's one of the most beautiful places I have ever been.
Next to her, junior Alexander Bless also made the trip this year to LeConte.
It was definitely really rewarding. I had a really great time, and like everyone has said, the weather is beautiful, and it was just really cool to see it up close.
Have you been in a helicopter before? Or?
Never have. Okay. That was probably one of the most exciting parts.
It's a little scary almost, huh?
Yeah, getting in and out when it's still running, when you're like on the side of a cliff, it's kind of scary.
The annual survey depends on donated helicopter transportation by Temsco Helicopters and local pilot Wally Obrokta. Despite the exciting ride, Bless says the students didn't have any trouble getting the survey points they needed.
Yeah, it was a great view. We got it perfect. Line right along the base of the glacier, and we're able to pick, I think, about 12 points.
Students crunched the position of those 12 points and prepared to map out the spots compared to data collected by generations before them. Prior students have mapped some big retreats of the ice mass in the 1990s, but since then, the springtime location of the glacier's terminus has not shown any big changes in its location. Troutman says the timing of this year's survey was the same as last year's.
So keeping things constant, we can say it's pretty much the same place. Its face has changed. There's a fast-moving point that seemed to have broke off, but that always does that in the summer anyway. Maybe it just happened a little bit earlier. And the ice field is thinning, we know that. So we're going to shoot, we got some verticals, so we're getting some thicknesses above the water. And from last year, we know it is thinning. You know, there's not as much ice back up in the ice field.
Troutman says that's not the only new information being gathered by PHS students.
And so we have six other students that are working with the University of Alaska Southeast doing bathymetry, current flow. They have a National Science Institute funding to go do basically the rate at which the glacier is moving, the rate at which the water is traveling out and in. And we now have three students in each one of those groups.
Also, for the second year, the program has benefited from high-resolution satellite images of the glacier, taken about the same time as the student visit. The images are provided by a former student who did the survey back in 1991, Bob Davidson. He works for GeoNorth LLC, a company that provides geographic information systems and satellite data. The satellite image can be used as a basic check on the work that the students are doing. Troutman says the research on LeConte is important because of its location.
Number one, it's in our backyard. And number two, it's unique. There is no other tidewater glacier south of here until you get into Chile. So this is the southernmost tidewater glacier in North America, which should be a pretty good, control compared to all the other glaciers. Because it's the last one. Down here.
The website for the program has a wide array of photos, videos, research, and links about the glacier and the Stikine ice field. You can also see a roster of students who participated in the survey dating back to 1983, along with some time-lapse photography from the fjord and annual photos of the ice terminus. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
The survivor of a brown bear mauling near Yakutat 10 days ago says the animal was startled and attacked instinctively. Ken Speck is recovering from his wounds with family in Anchorage. He spoke recently with KCAW's Robert Woolsey about his experience.
some of the early official reports of Kenny Steck's encounter with a brown bear in Disenchantment Bay on May 13th indicated that he had a gun when the bear charged but did not have time to use it. That's not quite right.
For a lot of reasons, and I'm not exactly sure why, but really didn't even think twice about bringing a weapon or bringing the bear mace.
Steck had camped overnight on a gravel bar with seven other people. Given the noise and disturbance that a party of this size makes, he didn't think it necessary to bring one of the two hunting rifles on his 200-yard walk to fetch water. But a gun may not have made any difference. The bear stood up in the brush around 30 yards away and went on the move.
When I heard the bear, I turned around, and it was already running at me three-quarters, if not full speed. And, I keep replaying the scenario in my head. Even if I had a rifle, especially around my back that was slung, I don't know if I would have had enough time to get it off my back, put a round in the chamber, and place a well-aimed shot.
In some ways, Steck says it was a by-the-book brown bear attack. At least it seems that way in hindsight.
I feel like the bear saw me as a threat, and it took me down, and once it realized that I wasn't as tough as it thought I was, it took off and didn't want anything to do with me.
Steck estimates that the bear was on him for about 20 seconds, though he has no way of knowing for sure. Steck is a military veteran. He spent 4 years in active duty in the Marine Corps as a firefighter and EMT. After leaving the Marines, he served in the same capacity as a civilian in Iran for 14 months in Kirkuk, about 100 miles north of Baghdad. He says he was scared sometimes doing that work, but nothing comes close to his experience with the bear. Steck says that during the encounter itself, his fear was almost irrational.
I do remember when the bear had my head in its mouth. My brain obviously was in shock. My body was in shock, and I just remember thinking, this bear is going to swallow me whole. He's going to eat me and walk away, and nobody's ever going to find me. I was kind of thinking crazy thoughts, obviously the bear wouldn't be able to do that, but I thought the bear was just going to take me and nobody would ever find me, and I was going to die within the next few seconds.
Steck says the bear left on its own. The other members of his party heard him shouting at the animal but arrived too late. Four of them were nurses. Steck's wife, Hannah, with 8 years' experience in emergency rooms and intensive care units, and his brother-in-law, Isaiah Carlson, and his wife, Heidi, who've worked for the last 3 years at the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage, and Ellen Ivers, who just graduated from nursing school. Steck jokes that he married into a good family. They provided first aid and transported him the quarter mile along the gravel bar to their boat, and then on the 90-minute return to Yakutat. He's serious, though, that he harbors no ill will toward this bear.
I understand that the bear was just reacting, and, I don't really have any intentions of going to hunt that bear and wanting to kill the bear.
Steck admits that he might have been a little too complacent going to fetch water that day, and that this encounter will affect the way he hunts and camps and enjoys the outdoors in the future. He's feeling grateful to be alive and a little humbled.
Grace was totally extended to me, and I did nothing to deserve it.
Steck was in transition between jobs in Juneau and Glen Allen when the attack occurred. He says his new employers at the Bureau of Land Management are willing to give him time to heal. Steck expects a full recovery in 4 to 6 months. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
47 runners and walkers, along with a dozen roller skaters and bicyclists, leapt the loop on Saturday morning at the Petersburg's Little Norway Festival. The annual run and walk is a little over 4 miles along Haugen Drive, Sandy Beach Road in North Nordic. Jonathan Christ-Tompkins of Sitka was the fastest runner, with a time of 27 minutes and 23 seconds. Rachel Kramer of Petersburg was the first woman across the line in 32 minutes and 16 seconds. Cedar Helms was the fastest finisher in the alternates division for skaters and cyclists, with a time of just under 25 minutes. In other results from the weekend, Petersburg's Ragnarok Rollers beat the Southeast Sirens 198-92 at the Mayfest Mayhem 2 Roller Derby bout Friday night. The sirens were made up of skaters from Wrangell and Ketchikan. Also at the Eric Coral Memorial Norski softball tournament, Hawken beat the Harbor Bar 16-4 in the championship game Saturday night. Five teams played in that tournament at Petersburg's ball fields on Saturday. Well, this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.